ॐ सहना भवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सह वीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु, मा विद्विषावहै. ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. We'll chant Keno Upanishad, part 2. It has only 5 mantras. So we'll chant all the 5 mantras, 1 to 5. Yadi manyase suvedeti dhabrame vapi nunam tvam veta brahmano rupam yadasya tvam yadasya deveshvatanumi mamsyamevate manye viditam. यदि मन्यसे सुवेदेति दभ्रमेवापि नूनं त्वं वेत ब्रह्मणो रूपम् यदस्य त्वं यदस्य देवेश्वतनुमीमांस्यमेव ते मन्ये विदितम् नाहं मन्ये सुवेदेति नो न वेदेति वेद च यो नस्तद्वेद तद्वेद नो न वेदेति वेद च नाहं मन्ये सुवेदेति नो न वेदेति वेद च यो नस्तद्वेद तद्वेद नो न वेदेति वेद च यस्य मतं तस्य मतं मतं यस्य न वेदसः अविज्ञातं विजानतां विज्ञातमविजानतां यस्य मतं तस्य मतं मतं यस्य न वेदसः अविज्ञातं विजानतां विज्ञान आनताम् प्रतिबोध विदितं मतममृतत्वं हि विन्दते आत्मना विन्दते वीर्यं विद्यया विन्दते मृतम् प्रतिबोध विदितं मतममृतत्वं हि विन्दते आत्मना विन्दते वीर्यं विद्यया विन्दते मृतम् इह चेदवेतीदत सत्यमस्ति न चेदिहावेदी महति विनष्टिः भूतेषु भूतेषु विचित्य धीराः प्रेत्यास्मा लोकाधमृता भवन्ति इह चेदवेदी दत सत्यमस्ति न चेदिहा वेदी महती विनष्टिः भूतेषु भूतेषु विचित्य धीराः प्रेत्यास्मा लोकाधमृता भवन्ति. Last week we had completed part 1 of Keno Upanishad. In fact, the Upanishad is over with the question and the answer that is given by the Guru in the very first part. So since there are different varieties of disciples, Uttama, Madhyama and Adama. Uttama means highest level of students. Madhyama means mediocre and Adama means lower. So since there are different capacities in each one of us to grasp this knowledge, the Upanishad continues. Otherwise, the Upanishad is over with the very first and second mantra in part 1. The very first mantra is the question and mantra 2 answer is given. In fact, not even the full mantra. The very first line says Shrotra says Shrotram. Upanishad is over. Then it talks about the benefit of that knowledge. That the first and second verse, the Upanishad is over. But then he continues further, giving detailed explanation, so as to cater to all of us, not only to the Uttama Adhikari. So, to the extent one is qualified, to that extent one gets that knowledge immediately and realizes the self. So, without any confusion or doubts, with certainty, the Uttama Adhikari understands. Whereas the Madhyama Adhikari understands with certain doubts and confusions. And the Adama Adhikari understands it ulta, topsy-turvy. And one who is not at all adhikari doesn't understand. Not a word he or she understands. They are not even interested in it. So, to the extent you are qualified, to that extent you can grasp this knowledge. That's why Upanishads don't go and reach out people. I remember very well, many years ago, one gentleman in Delhi, you know, he had met me and he is running a huge company in Delhi. So he was telling me, I would like to listen to Upanishads from Swamiji. So does he teach Upanishads in Delhi? I said, no, he doesn't. He only teaches Bhagavad Gita. So then I want to listen to the Upanishad. I said, then you have to go to the ashram and stay there during that time. He said, I'm so busy, caught up in my business, so I can't. So can you request Swamiji? I said, Arey yaar, he will not do Upanishads here. If you want to learn, you have to go there. He said, you still please find out for my sake. I said, yeah, I'm very sure he will not do it, but anyway, let me get back to you. Same thing what Swamiji said. If he wants to listen to Upanishads, let him come here. You need to really do a lot of tapas to understand what the Upanishad does. Like I said, clear understanding of Upanishad happens to the extent you have done reflection and sadhana. And if you are too rajasic and not sattvic, with some confusion you will understand. But if you are too rajasic and tamasic also, then you will understand everything wrongly, ulta. So, therefore the Upanishadic masters want to test out whether you are qualified and only then they give you. This, even with so much of explanation, we go through somersaults to understand what these Upanishads are trying to say. So, in the beginning, the question was asked by the disciples. There was no name of the disciple given, no name of the guru also given. Simply the disciple is asking question. Kene ishitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena ishitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha. Kene ishitam vacham imam vadanti chakshuhu shrotram kaudevo yunakti. A clear analysis of the human personality is given by the Shishya when he is asking the question. He's making it very clear from the question we know that how much he has done research, how much he knows. And he just wants help from the guru in that last bit, which is the most difficult bit. So he's done all the other exercise. So he knows that a human being is a combination of spirit and matter, the atma, vasanas, body, mind, intellect, the perception, action, emotion, thought, perceiver, actor, feeler, thinker, contemplator, and the human personality is covered by 5 sheets, annamaya kosha, the food sheet, pranamaya kosha, the energy sheet, vital air sheet, and then manomaya kosha, the mind sheet or mental sheet, and vijnanamaya kosha, the intellect sheet, and then anandamaya kosha, the bliss sheet or vasana sheet, then the atma. So, the Atma is covered by these 5 sheets as it were. So, the Atma reflecting through all this. So, what he is asking is, by what impelled or forced or compelled, united by what the so-called divine aspect, is it something part or a product or a part? Is it a part of the material component, or is it a product of this material component? When they come together, does the Atma come out? Or is it inherent in them? Or is it something that is apart? Kau devaha yunaktiti. It's something shining. The shine doesn't originally belong to this material component. So this shine, is it inherent or a product or something coming from outside? What is it? Where is it? Who is God? In short, if you have to put it in layman's term. But when he is asking that question, he is making very clear that he has gone through all this homework. So, this is the question he is asking. Is this independent or not? Then he says, Shrotrasya Shrotram. It is the source. The guru is replying. It is the source and not the inherent or product. It is apart. It is independent. It is satyam. The material components are dependent on it. that is not dependent on the material component. In other words, this doubt is there in every one of us. In fact, a lot of people say when a person dies, they say Atma is gone. Atma doesn't go. The reflecting medium which reflects the Atma is gone. The reflecting medium which reflects the Atma is the subtle body. That is gone. Therefore, you don't see the reflected being. The Atma, the pure consciousness, is reflected through the reflecting medium called the subtle body. Hence, the reflected individual or Jiva comes, which is you, me and all of us. So, it is not that the Atma goes. It is not that these equipments, when they die, the shine goes away. The shine is there. The equipment has moved. Therefore, the reflected being is not there. So, therefore, what he wants to say is, Atma is independent, which means you are independent, but these material components are dependent on it, and being dependent and then identified, the reflected consciousness, the individual, emerges. So that is the real source, ear of the ear. And knowing this, what happens is, you become absolutely freed from all the samsara. You understand that you were never born. See, this entire samsara is because of the sense of limitation. The sense of limitation comes because of your identification with the senses and the mind. The moment you gain this knowledge, your identification with the senses and the mind drops. The sense of limitation goes. When the sense of limitation goes, the entire samsara is gone. Therefore, we should never try to solve the samsaric issues with the solutions from the samsara itself. It will only be temporary. Can't be permanent. The permanent solution to all our samsara lies in realizing our true nature. That's what this verse is communicating. Your true nature is that ear with capital E. And that is independent. That is satyam. These material components are the dependent factor which is represented by the small ear, E. So it is the ear of the ear. That is independent source from which it is this limited matter draws its energy and shines. So it's a borrowed shine. Shining belongs to the Atma. So all the great things that we are achieving actually should be attributed to Atma. Though Atma doesn't do anything. So when we gain this knowledge, what happens is, in spite of all our great achievements, we will still be humble. And then not only that, we understand that we are the source, all these are dependent. So we never become dependent on any of this. We will always remain independent. As a result, nothing in samsara affects you. You become immortal. Go beyond birth and death, because the birth itself is because of the pure consciousness reflected through the senses and the mind. When we view the whole thing from the limited position, the whole thing seems to be limited. That very tendency to measure everything with this limited equipments has to drop. When we drop that, instantly we realize. So, it is not knowing, it is dropping. You are already the self. There is nothing to know. You just need to drop all the conditions. That one thing to know has to be dropped. So, therefore he said, the eyes cannot reach it, nor any of the senses or the mind can reach it, or the intellect can reach it. It is your subject and not the object of comprehension. Therefore, the Guru says, we know it not. We do not know how to impart it. So the clue here is, and he says, we do not know. And immediately he says, we do not know how to impart it. Means they actually know it. They know it because they are the Atma. They know it subjectively. They don't know it objectively. And the moment you try to communicate the infinite through the finite, you compromise. You cannot communicate. Therefore, they say, we do not know how to impart it. and it is also not possible to be imparted through the equipments and cannot be received by you. The receiver has to drop the equipments, then in silent communication the knowledge gets transferred. So then he says that indeed is beyond the known and the unknown. Thus have we heard from the ancients who expounded that to us. So the traditionally the knowledge was passed on, and we know that it's beyond the known and the unknown. This entire universe can be split into two, known and the unknown. The manifested and the unmanifested. There are certain things which is manifested now. There are so many seeds under the ground which is not manifested. They are also part of the same universe. So this is beyond known. You cannot know it objectively. It is that which is subjective principle. So you cannot know it objectively. Nor can you say you can never know it. It is not something unknown. It is known by every one of us. Being ourselves, everybody knows it. It would be wrong to say we do not know it. So it's neither known nor unknown. It's beyond both the known and the unknown. It is beyond both the knowledge and the ignorance. Then five times he repeats from verse number 5 to 9, which is what we saw last week. He says, it is not what the speech expresses, it is that which makes the speech, organ of speech express. It is not what is expressed by the organ of speech, it is that which makes the organ of speech express. Whether it is with reference to organs of action or organs of perception, mind, intellect, everything, it is the Atma that enlivens them. Through the equipments, you cannot know it. That's what he says. You cannot know it through the organs of action. You cannot know it through the organs of perception. You cannot know it through the organs of, the inner organ called the mind. You cannot know it through the intellect. You can only know it internally as yourself. You cannot know it objectively. Therefore, what you people worship here is Brahman with gunas, attributes. But this is not Brahman. Even if you say Om, Om is also a symbol of Brahman only. It's a sound. Sound is the subtlest symbol. There are gross symbols like fire, and then there is physical forms that people worship. See, fire is the first element that can be seen. Space is the subtlest, cannot be seen. Air cannot be seen, but fire can be seen. Fire, then comes water and earth. So of the elements, space is the subtlest, then next subtler thing is air, the next subtler is fire, the next subtler is water, the next subtler is earth. Why do we say subtle? The less number of equipments that can contact makes it subtle. And also, its pervasiveness. Space is the subtlest because space pervades every other element. And space can only be contacted by the ear. Therefore, it's the subtlest. And then after that comes air. Air can be contacted by ear and touch. And similarly, fire. Fire can be contacted by ear, touch and seeing. Then comes water, can be tasted also. Then comes earth, can be smelled. So earth is the element which can be contacted by all the five elements. So therefore it is the grossest. Five senses. Whereas space is the element which can only be contacted by one sense, ear. It's the subtlest. So we say Safvi. Safvi means space, air, fire, water, earth. Subtle to gross. In this order, fire is the first element that can be seen. For fire was taken as a symbol of worship. And also, fire when it is lit, it destroys the darkness around. So, when you gain the knowledge of the self, it removes the ignorance of the self. Therefore, fire was taken to represent the Atma, God. And also when you strike a matchstick and hold it even upside down, the fire will glow upward direction. So the more and more you gain the knowledge of the self, your awareness turns upward. So in all these are reasons for taking fire as a symbol to worship. You can worship anything. Anything can represent Brahma. So you have fire as symbol, you have various forms as taken as symbol for God. You also have sound, Om, and many other sounds as symbol. Sound is the subtlest, which travels in space. So it's the subtlest. So therefore, you have all kinds of symbols representing God, but they are not God. They are all symbols representing God. Yasaguna, with attributes. So they are manifest. Whereas Brahman is beyond manifest. It is not saguna. So therefore, five times he repeats. Tadeva brahmatvam viddhi nedam yadidam upasate. Not what you people worship here. Because what you worship or identify and do, puja. See, in other words, none of this are worthy of being worshipped. And a money-minded person only worships money. A fame-minded person worships fame. But none of this is worthy of worship. The only thing that is, worship means identification, remember. The only thing that is worthy of identification or worship is Atma. That alone is Brahman. None of this is Brahman. None of this is permanent. So you take the saguna to be Brahman. That is another problem. So there are all kinds of misunderstandings are there. Some people misunderstand and that knowledge cannot reveal the Atma. One needs to experience it. Something happens in the body and you experience it. That is Brahman. That kind of misunderstanding is there. Another misunderstanding is one cannot know it, you know, directly. You can only know it through experience. You cannot know it yourself. That misunderstanding is there. And some people misunderstand that Saguna Brahman to be, the truth. But Brahman is beyond all this. None of this is Brahman. This is not Brahman. So, keeps on cautioning. The moment you try to grasp Brahman and you think you have grasped it, you have not grasped it. The very method has to be dropped. So, it's not knowing, it is dissolving. This is what I was saying in the class also earlier. You cannot know Brahman objectively. You have to dissolve in Brahman. The individuality has to be dropped. And the individuality is dropped, the totality is gained. See, we have created this false identity and all this false security we have created. Whole thing with intellect, what we have done, we have put up this fence, this defense. We have not learned to live with no fence around. As long as you have the fence may protect you from the outside world, but it will also confine you to a limited environment. That's what you need to understand. So the way we live is we have put a fence around us with our intellect. See, the intellect is for transactional purpose. But when it comes to knowing the truth, it itself becomes a hindrance. That's the problem. You're not careful. So with the intellect, when you analyze, with that vichara, you should drop it. With that understanding, you drop it, you get it. But who will drop it? Who is ready to drop it? Who is ready to become a nothing? And that nothing is everything actually. This something is nothing. Whereas that nothing is everything. So you think I start blabbering once I start taking Upanishad, but that's the truth. The truth is, this something is nothing. But nothing is everything. If I ask you, what is there? What do you see? Is there anything? Am I holding anything? Is there anything? Nothing.
No.
But the palm is there. You know, but there is nothing on it. But the palm alone is there. So, if I keep this and say, if I ask you, what is there? You'll say phone. Phone is there. If I take it off, say nothing is there. But the palm is there. The Atma is there. But to know the Atma, this has to go. Everything that you know has to go. That wanting to know also should go. And that is what is going to give you that experience or truth. But that you need guts. That's why he says, it is not what you hear, but what makes you hear. All that you heard is what you write as your notes. All your notes are what? Nothing but your, what you heard with your ears. But he says, it is not what you hear, but what makes you hear. What makes you hear is divinity. What you heard and wrote down is all garbage. So what you have to do, to tear all your notes and throw it in the bin. When I say that, the notes tell us what is not the truth. And you must have the courage to drop what is not the truth. As long as you don't drop what is not the truth, you won't find liberation. You will not find liberation. So to find liberation, the Upanishad is saying, everything that you know till date, you drop. And the curiosity to know that is unknown today, what is unknown to you today, you through curiosity, you explore and you try to know. So the unknown has become known. There are lots of unknowns which can become known in future. So you think you can know that? No. It is beyond the known and the unknown. Therefore, all that you know, you drop. And that curiosity know, to know that also you drop. And the moment you drop that, instantly you find it. But you must have the courage to drop it. So it is discovering, it is unlearning, it's not learning. That's what the Upanishad is saying. So we go on hearing and we gather more and more information and we think we are knowledgeable. So we are actually conditioning ourselves. We are putting more and more fence and we are confining ourselves. And the foolish thing is, in the hope of liberating, we are confining ourselves. And foolishly what we are doing is, we are increasing the circle of our confinement. And then thinking that I am becoming more liberated. So from 2-bedroom, I have gone to 5-bedroom. Oh, it's developing, growing. And from 5-bedroom, it has gone to 5-bungalow-sized house. One house itself equal to 5 bungalows. He thinks he is more liberated. Who is really more liberated? Lord Shiva. Why? Because he is Aniketa. Aniketa means homeless. No boundaries whatsoever. The entire universe is. That's why those who understand, they give everything away, say Hari Om, and then take up sannyas. Sannyas, from you and your point and my point, we think we are poor fellows, they are suffering. You know, they have known the truth. They said, I don't want myself to be confined. There's no way you can confine them because they've got the knowledge. See, you may have the desire to roam around. As a result, you are roaming around wearing the akka robe. That's different. Then you are not a true sannyasi. A true sannyasi is not confined. Not because his mind is agitated and he can't sit in one place. He has no boundaries. All our boundaries. This is material boundary I talked about as a means to communicate. We have much more confinement at the mental level and intellectual level. All those confinements we have to drop. All our knowledge has to be dropped. And it is not even unknown means you have to drop the tendency to know, because what is unknown can be known tomorrow. You drop that. The moment you drop, you become knowledge. It's beyond the known and the unknown. Therefore, he says, it's not what you hear, but what makes you hear. With the hearing, you condition yourself more and more. You've conditioned ourselves. That's why there's a lot more fighting going on. You know, so these kind of issues, you know, this is, should I put vertical, tilak or horizontal, or even in vertical, with padam or without padam, all this kind of unnecessary quarrels. The Upanishad says, nobody knows the truth. They only know the Sarguna Brahman. They do not know the truth. So some people think that they have known the truth, but what they know is only the manifested power. They don't know the entire truth. Knowing a little bit, they think they know everything. It's a big problem. The six blind men of Hindustan poetry we studied. Six fellows who are blind went to see what an elephant looks like. To see an elephant, you need eyes, and all of them are blind. If they went, and each one touched upon one particular part, and then they confirmed that the elephant is like this, elephant is like that. That's what the poem says. So, and then they're very sure, 100% sure. They say even the blindest can see. Deny the fact, who can? This is the language they use. Exactly the same thing is happening in spiritual field. That's why in Tamil they say, Kandavar Vindilar, Vindavar Kandilar. Same thing the Upanishad they say. The Upanishads and the Siddhas of South, they have the same vision. Those who know the truth, they have the same vision. So the Upanishad is going to talk about it. What I said just now, Kandavar Vindilar, Vindavar Kandilar. So, those who know, they keep quiet. Those who don't know, they talk. They talk not. Talk means don't look at me. You're also talking. I have to talk because in the class I have to talk. Otherwise, I listen. You talk. Mostly that's what happens. So, it is not an object of comprehension. It is a subjective apprehension. This he drives home from verse 5 to 9. It is not what you people worship here, worship here, worship here. Now he continues from where he left in part 2. So having given the Upanishad, those who understood and realized the self, he just wants to make sure that there is no misunderstanding. Comes to ascertain. So the Guru brings out a certain point in first mantra of part 2, saying that if this is what you are thinking about it, then you have not understood it. You still have to know the truth. Then the Shishya gives a response saying, I understand what your problem, what you are trying to communicate, but I am free from that confusion. I actually know it. This is how the second part starts. So let's go to part 2, mantra 1. Yadi manyase suvedeti dabhrame vapi nunam tvam veta brahmano rupam yadasya tvam yadasya deveshvatanumimamsyamevate manye viditam. Yadi manyase suvedeti dabhrame vapi nunam tvam veta brahmano rupam dasya tvam yadasya deveshvatanumi mamsyamevate manye viditam. Yadi. Yadi means in case. If. Yadi manyase suveda iti. Yadi manyase suvedeti. Suveda iti. Yadi manyase suveda iti. In case you think, I know well. Suveda. Suveda means I know it well. If you think I know Brahman well, you know perhaps very little indeed. Sabrameevapi. Sabrameevapi means very little. Very little means what? You actually don't know. It's a very polished way of saying you don't know. What you know is very little. You've understood, but you understood little bit. And then the fellow's ego is okay. But actually what it means is you understood nothing. So, dabhram eva api. This is dabhram. It is, your understanding is not correct. If you think I know well, you know perhaps very little indeed. The form of Brahman you have known relates to that of gods. Brahmana rupam. Brahmanaha Rupam. It's the form of Brahman. It's the manifestation of Brahman. It is Saguna, not Nirguna. Brahman is Nirguna. But all you have put in efforts and you have known, what you have known is Saguna. It's not Nirguna. It's an experience at the mind and intellect level. It's a very subtle experience. You have to still go beyond it. So the form of Brahman you have known relates to that of gods. See, if you see Brahman in English, when you translate, you use the word God, singular word, God with capital G. And gods, when he says here with small g and plural, S is added there, it is something other than Brahman. It is manifested powers. So, the form of Brahman you have known relates to that of gods. Brahmanaha. Therefore, now that which is to be known, that which is to be known, which is Brahman, I think is still to be ascertained by you. So the Guru is saying, whosoever thinks I know it well, they do not know. Yadi manyate suveda iti dabrameva nunam stvam vetas brahmano rupam. So therefore, this is Brahmanaha rupam. Rupam, it's not necessarily the physical rupa. It's also the rupa means any manifestation which is grasped by the mind and intellect. See, what happens is, when you purify your chitta and then you get into upasana, in the upasana, the chitta ekagrata happens. Then, since a sadhak has subtilized his mind and intellect with clear logic, he has cut through the samsara, and with pure devotion, he has made himself very clean. So in this kind of a confluence of pure mind and subtle intellect, there is a brilliant subtle experience he gets at the mind and intellect level. That is misunderstood by the student as if it's Brahman. That's not Brahman. So, those who do those kind of sadhana, they experience certain things which is not Brahman. Therefore, the Guru is cautioning, if you think you know, well, which means you know, he is playing with the word know. The whole portion, he'll be playing with his word know, knows, unknown, and all this. Veda. Veda means know, to know. So he says, if you think you know well, perhaps you know very little. Because you are, the experience is objective, it's not subjective. It is Saguna Brahman that you know. It's not the real Brahman. The form of Brahman you have known relates to that of gods. So, if you have gone through, to even experience this kind of subtle experience, you should have done a lot of tapas. So it's not, he's obviously talking about those students. He's not talking about somebody who's still stuck at the grass level. He doesn't experience anything. So, those who go through that, they think they've got it. They think they've realized. So there is some kind of a feeling that is associated with it that they get. So he says, you do not know. Because you have grasped it externally. That which you grasp externally is not Brahman. So I think, the Guru is saying, I think, therefore you should still ascertain the truth. You still need to do a lot more reflection. Mimamsa. Mimamsa means you got to still do reflection and ascertain. Why? Because we stop our effort. That's why he'll be doing that Upanishad later. It's called the Isavasya Upanishad. In that he says, those who are lost in the world are in ignorance. Those who are lost in spiritual field, they are in deeper ignorance. Blinding darkness. Because once you take that kind of experience to be the real spiritual experience, that's a problem. When you start going inward, you get deeper experience. Like we saw in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna goes through those kind of experiences. You know. So, when you go inward, you stop all this external travel and going in the sense world. You stop that and go inward. There you get a different kind of experience because of the confluence of mind and intellect which is purified and satellite. And that people take it to be the self. So the Guru is saying that is also not the self. That is also the height of experience of the mind and intellect level. You still need to transcend the mind and intellect level. So, you should remember, the very knower has to be not there. If the knower, knowing is still there, that kind of knowledge which involves the knower knowing, that is not Brahman. In the true Brahman, the knower dissolves. There is no separateness between the knower and the known. The knower is the known. The object and subject merges. Whereas here, the object and subject has not merged. The subject knowing the object, they have not merged. Therefore, that is not Brahman. So, simply you have experienced some subtle, brilliant expression of Brahman. But that still is not Brahman. So, don't misunderstand that to be Brahman. Once you misunderstand, you stop all the sadhana. You think you have crossed. You haven't crossed. You are still not crossed. So therefore, he says, you still need to do lot more reflection, I think. So these are general advice the Guru is giving to the disciples. And one of the disciples or few of the disciples who has understood what the Guru is trying to say and also has got the real knowledge of Brahma, not this kind of knowledge that Guru is cautioning. He ascertains in the next verse that no, I have actually got it. So with playing with words, especially on the word no, with the word no, he also replies. That is mantra 2. So in this mantra, he just wants to say, Brahma Vidya is not an experience that is caught externally. It is a subjective knowledge. So the Guru cautions, don't become lackadaisical. Become lackadaisical. In fact, many people who just come to studying these scriptures because they have some problem. Once the problem is over, they become lackadaisical. They are not really interested. You need to cater to their, you need to tickle their sense of humor. If you talk very seriously, they are boring. They are not interested in Brahman. They are interested in some entertainment. This is one of entertainment. In fact, I remember a lot of people who come to Swamiji's lectures. Some of them they talk to us. That's how we know. They come because Swamiji keeps quoting Shakespeare, William Wordsworth. So he enjoys all this English poetry and quotations and all that. So he is coming to that. He has no interest whatsoever in Brahman Atman. He purely comes for these things. Some people come for Swamiji's jokes. You come for lectures because he cracks a lot of jokes. So all kinds of people are there. But if you are interested in the truth, you do not know. At least the worldly fellows, they are in the world, they have no problem, they know that they don't know, and they are continuing their life. They probably don't even have any inkling of understanding of it. So they don't care. But you think you know, you put yourself into trouble. That's why the Guru is cautioning. So, you've got to still cross the mind and intellect both. See, the problem is, you cannot say, I know Brahman. You cannot say, I don't know Brahman. Brahman is beyond known and the unknown is. So how do you grasp it? How do you understand that which is beyond the known and the unknown? You should know it as your own subject, as yourself. The difference, then there won't be any distance between the known and the knower. The knower and the known merges. That's what the Guru says. Next verse. Naham manyesu vedeti no na vedeti vedacha. Naham manyesu vedeti no na vedeti vedacha. Yonas tadveda tadveda no na vedeti vedacha. Yonas tadveda tadveda no na vedeti vedacha. Naham manyesu vedeti no na vedeti vedacha. Yonas tadveda tadveda no na vedeti vedacha. Disciple is heavily punning on the word Veda. You get confused when you read these things. He says, Na aham manye suveda iti. Na aham manye suveda iti. I do not think I know well. Guru said, if you think you know well, you do not know. So the disciple first he says, I don't think I know well. Which means what? He's saying, I know it. I know the truth. So he's clarifying. He's ascertaining to the Guru. I do not think I know well. So it should not be understood that I don't know truth. So truth is not the category of unknown either. When I eliminated one, I should not put it in the other category. Truth is beyond the known and the unknown. So one half of it is answered here when he says, I don't think I know it well. I don't understand truth as known. So then do you understand truth as unknown? So he immediately says, no. Not that I don't know. Because if I don't know, then truth is not known by me because it comes under the category of unknown. He says, I know it certainly. I know it with certainty. I know it for certain. And then he says, he amongst us in this classroom, he amongst us who knows it, or he amongst us who does not know it, he amongst us who does not know thus also knows. Yonas tad veda tad veda nona vedeti vedeta. Now this second line is even more confusing. He says, he amongst us who knows thus knows. Thus means what? Something beyond known and the unknown. Who knows it subjectively. Not only who I know it subjectively, amongst us whoever knows it subjectively, they also know it. The next line he says, he amongst us who doesn't know it also knows it. Now this is where the problem comes. So what he's saying is, firstly, the whole thing seems to be played around that concept that Brahman is not an object of comprehension. It is not an object of comprehension. You cannot know it. Not only now, you can never know it in future also. It is not something part of your known knowledge. It is not part of the unknown which can become known tomorrow. It remains always as a subject within. Therefore, you cannot know it objectively. And that which cannot be known objectively, but can be known subjectively, you cannot say, I know it. Because the moment you say, I know it, you become object. And if you say, I don't know, then it will be feigning ignorance about yourself. That is also wrong. You are caught in this dilemma. You can neither say no, nor can you say, I don't know. So this beautifully the student explains to the guru. He says, I don't think I know it well. But just because of that doesn't mean that I don't know that. I know it. How? Like I know that I am a male or female. I know that Brahman. Therefore, I am Brahman. I don't have to know it externally. I am not putting in any efforts to know it. See, it's a very tricky thing. Got to put in effort and come to this level and drop all the efforts. As long as you are still continuing that effort, you cannot know it. That's what the Upanishads are saying. It's a fascinating thing. Our efforts today go in amassing wealth. Then your effort has to turn towards knowing the truth by studying the scriptures. And when you study the scriptures, what finally you understand is, you are the truth. You have to drop wanting to know the truth. And the moment you drop wanting to know the truth, you have gained that ability to stay independent. The kind of acceptance that you have, as long as that acceptance has not come, you will still have the intellect defending you from the onslaughts of the world. If you see the flowers, they have no defense. They have not created any defense for themselves. They are beautiful. They blossom. They put themselves in a vulnerable condition. They expose themselves to the heat, cold, the rainy season. They expose themselves to everything. They just accept the total. They are doing it unconsciously. A liberated soul does it consciously. And to do that, you need strength. That strength is not the strength that you get from your intellectual abilities. That's the strength that comes from within. Then you have dropped all defense. You actually become defenseless. Where your only trust is upon the truth. Today you trust on so many things. Swamiji says in a light-hearted way, the American dollar value keeps increasing because in the American dollar it is written, in God we trust. We trust in everything else other than God. The whole thing is dropping your reliance on everything other than the truth. So by gaining this knowledge, when you develop that acceptance, then you know. So this is what he's saying. I do not think I know it well. It's not an object. First thing. Second thing is this, not that I don't know, I know it for certain. Because I know it as myself. I don't know it objectively, but I know it as myself. Truth as myself. Then he says, he amongst us who knows that, knows that. He amongst us who understood it thus, like me, also knows that. The next line he says, he amongst us who doesn't know it thus, they also know. What do you mean by that? He amongst us who doesn't know, they also know. How can you not know yourself? Even when you're feigning ignorance, you actually know. You are not aware, that's all. So in the book, Swamiji gives a beautiful story to communicate this, simple story to communicate this. There's a courier to be delivered to a particular company, to the manager of a company. The courier fellow goes there. In the evening when he goes, the office is already closed. So he keeps it to be delivered next day. In the evening he is going with his family to meet, has been to the park to play with his children, his wife. There he meets another couple with their children. They meet each other. They talk to each other for a while and they come back. And then next day when he goes to deliver the courier, he finds that he actually had met the same guy last evening in the park. So when he came to the office, only he knew that this parcel, he could have delivered it yesterday itself had he known that that was the guy. So when he meets him, can he say that he didn't know him? He knew, but he didn't knew that that is him. That's the person to whom the courier needs to be delivered. So the same way, we are also Atma who are in ignorance. We know ourselves, but we do not have awareness. So therefore the Upanishad says, he amongst us who knows, knows. He amongst us who does not know, also knows. They also know. It's not that they do not have the self-knowledge, but they don't have the awareness. Awareness of the self. The self never leaves you. You are the self. You are never something else. You are always the self, whether you knew it or you didn't know it. So in the Vedanta Treatise book, he gives a very interesting story. He says, a country was, you know, submerged in a huge deluge, and the king somehow wanted the minister to save the child. At least, you know, he can, if he survives later on, he can become the king and help his subjects. So the minister saves the child and himself, the prince. The prince had a tattoo mark. By that only he could be identified. But after some time, the minister lost the child. He knows that the child is survived, but he has lost him. And the minister is the caretaker king till he could find the real prince and establish him as the king is ruling. And one day, the soldiers found the prince with a tattoo mark, and he was brought to the court. And the minister is thrilled, and he, establishes him as the king. He was begging on the streets, not knowing that he is the prince. And he was brought and established as the king. He went to the throne. This fellow is very uncomfortable. He thinks some tamasha is going on. Something is going to happen. So let me escape from this place. He escapes. They catch hold of him again. And they bring him. And this time he understands slowly that all this story, everything he understands. He understands that he is the real king. So now the guy purposely disguises himself as a beggar and goes and begs. Earlier also he was begging. Now also he is begging. What is the difference? Earlier he didn't know that he was the king. Now he knows that he is the king. That's the only difference. But he is always the king. He is always the king. So similarly, even those who do not know, they know. You know it already. You are that. But your very effort to know it delays the process. So you have to bring yourself to this level and then drop it. See, that dropping is not easy. Because that is what is keeping you somewhere. The mind needs to be kept busy. So the mind is a little bit happy. Oh, I go to my Upanishad class. Baba, whatever happens on Thursdays, without Upanishad, I am not. So that kind of gives some kind of a ego. All you fellows are wasting your time going into money making and this and that. I go for my Upanishad class. This kind of a thing. Here is this, that very knowing. See, these Upanishads require deep thinking. So when he says, you know it well, your knowledge itself is an obstacle. When you say you don't know, your ignorance is an obstacle. You remove both your knowledge and ignorance. What remains is the truth. Whatever you know now, drop it. Whatever you're ignorant about and want to know in future, drop that enthusiasm to know that also. And once the individuality is dropped, then the totality which remains is gained. The river has to merge itself in ocean. Only then you know. As long as you still try to retain the individuality. So with the intellect, when you really put a firm logic and reason, you are building a separate entity so strongly. And as long as you have put a separate entity so strongly, become extremely defensive. The truth wants to embrace you, but you are not letting go. Because of fear. That's why later on the verse is coming. The Upanishad therefore says, you need to be courageous enough to be able to allow yourself to be embraced. See, what amount of confidence you need to be yourself with friends, with real good friends. You may have just one or two. I doubt whether you have even one. If you have one, you are lucky. With whom you can be yourself. You can do whatever you want. There will be no judgment whatsoever. And in life, if you have found one person like that, you are lucky. And that one person would be a guru who has absolutely no judgment about you. Zero judgment. So, what happens when you are in such friendship? You trust yourself. You become absolutely defenseless. You become like the flowers. Not plastic flowers. Plastic flowers may live 100 years. They are still plastic. They are protected. They coat it. So the intellect itself becomes a protection for us. With all that defense logic, this, that. So you, the day you drop that, you've got to go beyond the mind and intellect. The tendency is to know, to perceive, to feel, to think Brahman. Nobody is really interested in becoming Brahman. If you really want to become Brahman, you've got to give up yourself. Only then the truth will embrace you. See, the limited cannot know the unlimited. The unlimited has to embrace you. And for the unlimited to embrace you, you've got to drop all the limitations. Your caste limitation, your education limitation, when people put MA, MPhil, BA, BL, all this, you know, drop everything. You don't think anything you know is worthy of knowing. The day you drop everything and become defenseless, the truth enters you. You got to become a receptacle for the pluck to enter you. And when you talk about self-realization, this is what the Upanishads are teaching us. It is not like you go to school, you learn. No. You've got to drop that defensive stuff. That courage has to come. And that courage can only come with knowledge, not intellectual knowing. That's why he says, I don't think I know well, not that I do not know. I know for certain. Because I have become defenseless. Now everything is acceptable. He amongst us who knows that. It's not only me, even in this classroom, there may be somebody else who has understood it like this. They also know the truth. But those people who think they don't know, they also know. But the problem is, they have to drop the conditioning. Then they become aware. As far as the knowledge is concerned, they also know. He amongst us who does not know, also knows. It's the very knowing principle in us which makes us know everything. How can you not know that? You're not aware of it, that's all. But the fact that you are so preoccupied, you don't see. See, as I'm talking, you are distracted. The moment I keep quiet, you notice your fan rotating sound. The fan revolving sound is there. There's some kind of a sound made by the fan when it's revolving. It's cutting the air and then you're getting that sound. But as I'm talking and your focus has come to me or my the sound that I'm making when I'm talking, you are not aware of that fan sound. The moment I become quiet, there is no input into your ears, then you become aware of this, which has always been there. So he amongst us who knows it means they have quietened their conditionings. He amongst us who doesn't know means they haven't yet quietened their conditionings. The moment they quieten their conditionings, the moment they gain the courage to become defenseless. When does that happen? It happens when you are in pure love. When you are in true love, the one and one becomes one. There is no two separate ones. There is only one. So you just be yourself. When that is not there, so when with reference to you and that, if this understanding has not come, then you will never be like that. You will never drop it. See, there is a very interesting story of a newly married couple traveling in the ship for their honeymoon. And then suddenly huge cyclonic waves come and attack the ship. And husband is terrified seeing all this. And that time the wife was cutting apple in the room. She just points the knife at him and he says, what are you doing? Just take away the knife. She says, you're not scared? There's no. What nonsense. I know that you and me are one. There is the question of you harming me. There's no fear. But this is not your relationship with the nature. So she says, I am not afraid because I have got a different relationship with nature. The problem with humanity is we never think that we are part of nature. We are always fighting with nature. We never think we are part of nature. If you look at it from the material component angle, what is this body made up of? This body is made up of five elements. It's come from these five elements. It is going to go back to these five elements. It is sustained by it. It will go back. Even now, it appears as if it is separate, but it is still the same. But in our mind, we have created this, you know, separation. And once we have created this separation in the mind, then there is a fight with nature. There is no love between us and nature. So we want to create difference. When it rains, of course your body gets wet. So to protect yourself from getting wet, you can put a thatched roof or anything above your body. That much you can use your intellect. But using your intellect, you're trying to protect yourself from nature, it's the madness. Because you are that. So tat swam asi. You and tat are one and the same. The moment you gain that knowledge, those who have understood Tattvamasi, then the relationship between you and Tat will be what? Between lovers who are one, they are not two. Then what? You will be yourself with no defense whatsoever, like that flower. So the one who knows has dropped all the defense. There is no more fighting with nature. That's why Vajragovinda says, Tasya emena na charcha. He doesn't have any charcha with Yama. Death. This seeming separation in the mind gets sorted out when a person dies because it merges back. Seeming separation goes. So once you gain this knowledge that tat and tvam are one and the same, then your relationship with nature becomes like lovers. That's what I wanted to emphasize here. So therefore he says, this is the only difference if at all. Amongst us who knows means they know like this. The other person doesn't know, therefore he has put defense. All defenses are useless. All your PhDs, all your multi-billion dollars, all your contacts, everything is useless. That very effort you are trying to keep protecting is a waste. But with knowledge, you dissolve. You just put, just not to get wet, not to protect, but just not to get wet for transaction purpose, you do it. That's fine. That's how a Mahatma lives. Therefore he says, I do not think I know well, nor that I do not know, I know it. How? I know it subjectively, I don't know it objectively. So the Shishya is confirming to the Guru, I understand what you are trying to caution me, but in my case, I haven't understood it intellectually, I have known it subjectively. And this I wanted to tell you with this answer. He is clarifying to the Guru. Thank you very much for cautioning me, but have understood truly. He is a Brahmajnani, self-realized soul. He doesn't have any misunderstanding. This is the clarification the Shishya gives. This is mantra 1, mantra 2. Let's conclude now. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kaina Vacha Manasendriyairva Budhyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhyan Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Eti Samarpayami. Hari Om.